With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hi there. If you hear reference in this podcast to things like today and yesterday, to confirm, we did record this podcast on Sunday morning, but due to some IT issues that were out of my control and are hopefully now well and truly fixed, not been able to get it out and edited until Tuesday afternoon. So just to save you some confusion there. Hello, welcome to Be a Terrier. Stephen Chicken here, joined by David Hartrick. I bet you weren't expecting that. Hi, Dave.
Hello. Why weren't they expecting that? I'm always here.
It's always you, innit? I don't know why I introduce you. It's always us.
I'm just always here following you around like a little shadow, just hoping to bask in your reflected glory.
Let's be honest, it's the other way around, if anything, isn't it? Right, we've got a game to talk about, but we won't dwell on it for a couple of reasons. One, it was a week ago. Two, it was 0-0. Yeah.
it was a good 0-0, though, wasn't it? It was a good point.
I quite enjoyed it, yeah.
I think the thing to address here more than anything else is that there seems to be a lot of people online who seem to think Town should have gone for that game, but they would have got absolutely murdered.
I think those people, to be fair, are in the minority. I think most people, you could see from the response at full time, I think a lot of people in the ground were quite happy with a point against Swansea, and rightly so. And, you know, I think when you look at the personnel they've got available, I don't think we want to see Town playing 5-4-1 every week for the rest of the season, because they'll go down if they do, because they don't have goals as it is. But, you know, with the personnel they've got and playing against Swansea, who we know dominate the ball, love to dominate possession, as you say, they would have lost 2-3-0 if they'd tried to go for that. I think it was the right call, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't even 5-4-1 at times. It was like 5-5, wasn't it, really? Because Swansea are so good at moving the ball around, and they're all so comfortable in possession, that the plan was to just try and contain and be compact and then try and nick something on the break. And it nearly came off at the very end, lest we forget. But I just think if they'd have gone into this break having lost that game, it feels a hell of a lot different than going in having taken 4 points from the last two. So I think it was completely the right way to go about it. Like you said, I wouldn't go into every game like that, far from it. But I think on that occasion, with it being a home game, it was important just to get something, anything from that game.
They actually had the best chances of the game as well. You know, the XG, they were almost double Swansea's. Obviously Danny Ward had that one cleared off the line, and Brahima Diarra went through late on, and we'll talk a lot more about Brahima Diarra later, I suspect, Dave. You know, a more experienced player probably makes something more out of that move as well. And, you know, I think we can sort of reflect now, and we've done it a bit over the last couple of podcasts, but I think we can reflect now on sort of the trajectory of Huddersfield Town season. And I think you and I are kind of a similar mindset, which is when Mark Fotheringham first came in, and I said this, I think, 2 or 3 episodes ago, you and I were sort of, well, let's wait and see. And I think for the first few games, we were quite on the fence, because we appreciated that he came into quite a difficult situation, no pre-season to speak of, team very low in bad form, and his first two games, you know, the defensive issues came to bear again, although they still got decent point away to Luton, to be fair. Then they lose, you know, they beat Hull, his first win. Then they lose to Rotherham and Preston, and Mark Fotheringham keeps saying he doesn't think that Preston performance was as bad as everyone makes out. Sort of beg to differ on that, to be honest. But I think from Middlesbrough onwards, they've been a lot more solid. A lot more solid defensively. Apart from against QPR, the numbers are a vast improvement on what we'd seen previously. And that is a big positive. And they're picking up points. They're picking up the required number of points to get them to 50. They're not scoring any goals, though, which is the big concern at this point, I think.
Yeah, it is. And the attacking return is not there at the minute. But I think the problem they have is I don't think the attacking return is going to be solved by anything other than a change of personnel. And that doesn't mean going out and buying a raft of players. It means getting some of the players they've got back. You know, you forget Jones, Tino, Andrew, and make such a huge difference options wise. And they also free, as I said on a pod a couple of weeks ago, they also free Sauber up a bit more in open play as well, because if you've got Dwayne Holmes one side and Sauber the other, you can afford to double up on Sauber. So yeah, we said after the break we're going to be a little bit more forensic about that attacking return once they have the players back, if it's still not where it needs to be. But yeah, I think you can't write off that defensive solidity, really. And you've got to remember where Town were at the start of this season and the goals they were conceding and the mistakes they were making and etc. To be where we are, what, how many weeks is it into Mark Fotheringham's time? Is it 8 weeks?
He's had less than that, yeah. He's had basically 6 weeks worth of games, seven weeks of games.
So to turn that round to the point where you can go to QPR and defend like that, and you can defend like against a team like Swansea and really restrict them to sort of half chances, which is what it really came down to, other than, you know, a couple that Lee Nichols looked like Lee Nichols again to deal with. So
excellent again, excellent performance.
So I know this is like you can look at it glass half full or glass half empty, but I think you have to look at the progress that's been made at that end of the pitch. Now let's see, you know, now we feel like they're back to where they should be, and certainly where they were last season in terms of that end of the pitch. Now let's see what happens at the other end.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I spoke to Peter Jackson, the long piece out on the website, as of Sunday morning, which I wanted to speak to Jacko, because when I look at the numbers, I've got a big spreadsheet of all the previous season's results, not just Town, but like I've got like a Championship results spreadsheet that tells
Nerd.
Me after... Yeah, that tells me after this many games, how many points did everyone have, etc., etc., and where did they then finish, which I've sort of referred to throughout the season, as a lot of people probably know. And the season that has kept coming up basically every step of the way this season is 97-98. Like, the points return is matching it very, very closely. 4 points after 8 games, as it was when Jacko came in. Fotheringham comes in after 9 games, with one of them being in caretaker charge. They're now on sort of a similar number of, you know, similar sort of story where performances and results weren't really there for his first few games, and are now sort of starting to see a bit more solidity, a bit more results, and there's a lot of similarities there. And Jacko was saying the first thing he did was fitness and confidence was the big thing. You know, get the players fit and get them confident and sort of get them believing that, yeah, you're bottom of the table, but you're a good side, and we'll change this, we'll change that. We'll make you so that you can, you know, when we get to the 90th minute, the opposition are flagging, you're still running. And I think Mark Fotheringham has taken the same approach. He's been, other than, you know, his sort of his rant after Hull, where it was sort of laying down the law, he's been sort of relentlessly positive about everything. And Jacko was saying he had to be that, because, you know, and you have to put a brave face on yourself and be, just be relentlessly self-confident, because you need that to transfer onto the players. And the fitness thing as well. I mean, you've commented, Town just looks so much fitter now than they did previously.
Yeah, all the injuries they've had as well, none of them have been muscle-related. You know, it's not like they've been blowing up in training. The players that have been fit and not had impact injuries, etc.
The one muscle one was Pat Jones, who was on international duty at the time.
And they do, you can see it. You know, you can't, like, the team that started this season was undercooked, and they would not have been able to defend like that against QPR. They would have folded. I'm telling you, they would have folded. 10 minutes to go, they'd have conceded one, and they'd have probably conceded another. And it's impressive. You know, like I say, I'm not asking people to believe that Mark Fotheringham is the second coming, or even that he's really good yet, because we still don't know, but all I'm saying on the evidence we've got, the two things we know he can do is get a team super fit in quite a short space of time, and two, really organise a defence regardless regardless of personnel, really, which is impressive. We've yet to see what he can do further up the pitch, but yeah, you know, like I said, without keeping referring to it, he has had his hands tied on that front. We can't, it's very difficult to sort of sit here and say, well, you know, we should be seeing more or we should be seeing this, because we just don't know at the minute, do we?
Yeah, I think probably the two players that you would say we probably should have seen more out of in attack are Jack Redoni and Dwayne Holmes. And then obviously the strikers are really out of form. So I think I'm quite sympathetic to Mark Fotheringham there, because like what are you meant to do when your strikers are getting in good positions, they're creating chances for him and they're just missing? You can't just say, well, shoot better, lads. Like it's not like they're not doing shooting drills. So from a head coach's perspective, you can't really do anything there. I mean, we're gonna do a separate transfer podcast, I think, because I think it's, if we start doing transfers here, we're just going to end up getting sidetracked, and I think it deserves its own thing. Plus, we've got a whole World Cup to fill, so, you know, spread it out a bit. But I think striker, and I think we alluded to it last time, they really need to look at in the January transfer window, and you and I have spent the last 3 years going, no, they're all right, they don't need a striker. I think you and I are firmly on the, you know what, they actually do need a centre-forward this January.
Also with the caveat that they have got a striker on the books we haven't seen a single minute of yet. But it does feel like they need to look that way, because, like, Danny Ward has been playing through an injury, which we now know. Am I happy I called that? It's not for me to say, Steve. But he is a striker who needs to feel like 100% to be at his absolute best. And the thing is, I wouldn't say he's unreliable or anything like that, but he's just, when he's out of form, he's never... The thing about Ward is, I feel like he's either really, really good for 10 games or he's just stuttering for 10 games. There never seems to be an in-between. And often we've pointed out, like, how hard he's working and what he's doing in the press and how difficult he's making life for defenders. He's been struggling to do that the last few games because he's clearly been carrying that injury, and it's very tough to fly into everything when you... It just takes something from his game. And Jordan Rhodes, I said to you, I'll say it on here, I can't remember if I said it on the last pod, but I thought he looked his age against Swansea, and that's not a criticism. Some people will take that as a criticism. He was the one who came back this season and actually did look super fit. He just looked his age when he was up against a very mobile, very quick and agile defence, you know.
Yeah, they're Swansea's defence role in the early 20s, aren't they?
Yeah, and he was always going to struggle in that situation. There are still game states and opposition where you think Jordan Rhodes could work very well, and ways you could set Huddersfield Town up when they've got all options available.
Well, I think if Swansea were a more of a back foot team with a early 20s centre back lot, you would actually expect Rhodes to do well there, because he's clever. We know that his movement can be very smart, and he can outsmart him. But when the chances are limited and his job
they play a really high line because they play possession. Yeah, exactly. So the problem is, most of the time when Rhodes wins the ball or he's got a chance on the ball to do something, he's 45 yards from goal. Yeah. That's what playing a high line does.
And he's not going to win a foot race against a 10 years younger, because he wouldn't have done that when he was 10 years younger.
So it's not that we're sort of going, oh, you know, Jordan Rhodes is finished or anything like that. It's just that he's not the man to start against a young defence like that, or a high line defence anymore. Now, Tyrese Simpson, who knows? Who knows? I mean, you did a bit of scouting on him, didn't you, Steve? I had a look at some of his stuff, and he looks like he's got massive potential, but he's quite raw, isn't he?
Yeah, very raw. He's very direct. I think it's fair to say, you know, he plays like a player with his build. And if you want to have a laugh, go and look at the profile page on the hafc.com and have a look at the first team profiles. And you've got Danny Ward and Jordan Rhodes standing there looking like, you know, athletes, normal, you know, normal sized athletes. And then you've got Tyree Simpson, who looks about as wide as the two of them put together. And I think it shows that he turned down a career in rugby union to go into football. And he sort of plays like that. Your scouting, Dave, well, I'm not going to take the words out of your mouth. What was your scouting revealing?
A lot of my scouting was very similar to that. But the one thing... the one thing I notice is that he needs to work on his finishing. He tends to take the ones you think he's going to miss and miss the ones you think he should definitely score. And the problem is, like, bless him, Danny Ward can be a little bit like that.
Yeah.
You know, Danny Ward can, a couple he's missed, you think, how have you missed that, Danny? And a couple he's scored, you think, how on earth have you done that? So, yeah, I think there's work to be done. So I think the conclusion we're both steadily coming to is they need another option, whether it's loan, buy, whatever.
And
but it would be a lot to just say, well, we've got Tyrese Simpson, so that's our other option for the whole second half of the season, wouldn't it?
Yeah. When I've looked at the numbers, I have looked at the finishing stats for Ward and Rhodes, and Ward massively sort of outperformed as usual last year, and is massively underperforming as usual this year. Rhodes has dropped as well, but less dramatically, but has still noticeably dropped. And I think I've said it before, but I think they've compensated for each other last season. When one hit a bad run, the other hit a good run. And this year, they've just both hit a bad run at the same time, and it's really costly. But I think, you know, we know how massive confidence is. I think having, knowing that there's going to be more chances coming will help them, I think. I mean, you've played, obviously, at a much lower level, but you're a centre-forward, Dave. I'm sure you can speak to that. When you know that there's going to be more chances coming, you can be a bit more relaxed and a bit more natural in front of goal.
Well, this is it. Like, Danny Ward was such a, like, I know we talked about it last season, but there were so many players that could have got Player of the Year last year. But for me, Danny Ward was right up there, because as a striker, he was coping with the fact that he wasn't getting that many chances, and he was still, his finishing was right where it needed to be. And you do get a bit frustrated when you think, okay, well, if I've got one chance to take here, I might not get another this game, never mind this half. So it does up the pressure. But like I say, we keep saying it, it's not an excuse, but they have been robbed of, like, a couple of the real attacking talents in this team they do make such a difference, because Pat Jones coming on and running at defenders for the last half an hour of games frightens the life out of
them. He's the other one we need to mention when we're talking about centre forwards, because he can play there and has played there, and he's a very good finisher.
Yeah, so that he makes a huge difference. And Tino, you know, we know Tino Andrew doesn't play 90 minutes, usually plays an hour and then comes off. But the difference is with Tino is you just, like, he's very difficult for an opposition to set up against, because you just don't know what you're going to get from him. And he drifts into spaces that other players don't necessarily drift to on that team. And he creates a bit of chaos. And at the moment, they haven't got chaos. That's the thing. They haven't got any chaos up front. It's very difficult for them to really ask different questions of defenders. And that's why it's all quite sluggish and a bit difficult. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting now. I think having praised Mark Fotheringham for what he's done at this point in terms of fitness and defensive quality, it will be interesting over January and February to see, can he do it further up the pitch too? Because they are two very, very different jobs, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think to some extent you can do a lot with coaching and do a lot on the training pitch in defence, but I think you can do less in attack. You can still do things. Mm. There's still a lot you can do, but it tends to be slower. And Town need, and you probably, I mean, they've got a mini pre-season now, to be fair to them, so you'd hope they'd be able to do something in that. But if you want an instant impact, and I think Town do need that, obviously, when you look at the fact they've, what is it, 3 goals in the last 7 games, something like that, they do need a bit of an instant impact. I don't know whether they're going to be able to get it. I think that the players coming back from injury could be massive, particularly Tino. But I think they need signings as well. And I think it might be a case of, I wouldn't be hugely surprised. I would expect to see more on the ball after the break, but I wouldn't be hugely surprised, particularly given that they've got some very difficult games coming up. Sheffield United, Watford and Preston, isn't it, who are all top half sides. If they were still a bit defensive the first 3 or 4 games back after the break, and then they're into January. Rotherham is the other game before January, and then Luton on New Year's Day. So I wouldn't be that surprised if they were still had the handbrake on slightly in those games, and then once they get those signings in, that's when they start going for it. But who knows, you know, might be that they go out to Marbella now and they come back and they're playing Manchester City 2-3-5 for all we know, because as Mark Fotheringham has said after Swansea, we've not really seen his playing style. We've seen the style that he's had to play, because his hands have been tied with personnel.
Yeah, and as he said, he ran through in the press conference with us, you know, Jonathan Hogg, not a minute, Tyree Simpson, not a minute, you know, various others that he's just not had any chance to work with. So, yeah, it'd be interesting because they've started to build a little bit of momentum. I think, weirdly for Town, we talk about this mini pre-season and this break and how good it would be to try and get some players back, or just having those players out for a few weeks when there's no games, you know, helps enormously too. But it's not that long, we should say. It's not like they've got, you know, 2 months or anything like that.
And the first week is rest and recuperation with a bit of running with the GPS on. But it's going to be sort of a week of rest first.
I mean, the players have all had this last week off. Mm-hmm. You know, they've and that's absolutely the right thing to do, because you can't just keep them running in the red zone.
They've had 11 games in 6 weeks, so fair enough.
Yeah. And then, like you say, it's sort of light duty is building up. So it's not, you know, there's not loads of time. They're coming back into a very tricky run. And you can look at it two ways. You can, as many good points you can make, I think, about having this little mini break. You can also say, but yeah, they were kind of building something. They were kind of getting a little bit of momentum. So it'd be interesting to see how they keep coming back. I think my mind is just warped with how they returned after COVID, having looked really good going into it, barring that Leeds game, which we've already talked about. But then they came back and they just looked a shadow of themselves. You're really hoping they come back from this silk break and they look different. Mm. You know, they look a lot more positive. Who knows?
I mean,
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mark Fotheringham has sort of hazarded as well, and he set out his stall early, and this is the other reason I think you might see them play with the handbrake on a little bit until they get into January, is he has said, you know, bear in mind that Tino has been out for, will have been out for over two months by the time he gets back. He's going to need time. Pat Jones the same, Hoggy the same. So even the players that you're expecting to get back after the break, the ones that have been out for like not just weeks but months by the time we get the other side of the World Cup break, are not going to come in and be 10 out of 10 at their best straight away. They're probably going to need a bit of time to settle back into the side. So yeah, who knows? But I think hopefully it's still a positive that they're getting those players back. I mean, I've sketched out a best 11, and I did one best 11 that was in a 4-3-3, and then was about to hit publish, and then I thought, is there another way of doing this? And I come up with a 3-5-2 or you could call it a number of different shapes. Basically, I think a 3-5-2, which I think allows you to get in all the players that I actually wanted to get in. Because the one I did originally, I was leaving out Etienne Kamara, which I didn't particularly want to do. I was leaving out Ben Jackson, which I didn't particularly want to do. And I think there is a way that you can get everyone in, which is a 3-5-2. Hellick, Hogg, Lees as your back three. Sorber and Ben Jackson as your wing backs. Kasumu, Kamara and Rodoni in midfield. And then you've got Angerin and Ward for now up top. Or Rhodes, again, sort of kind of a coin toss between those two. I think Andrin is an interesting one because he is not going to be doing, I think, quite the defensive job that Mark Fotheringham has been asking his players to do so far. But I also feel like he is good enough, obviously, on the ball that you just go, well, don't worry about it, Tino. We're still a better side for having you in here. But it's where do you then play him that you're not going to lose too much? And I do wonder if playing him either out wide or up top might be the way to go rather than sticking him into midfield.
Yeah, I've had a go at trying to sort of think what would be their best, and I, whatever formation it is, I just want someone close to the striker, because I think, like, however I look at it with the current personnel, you need to get somebody closer to whoever is up top, not just to play off them but just to be a presence through the middle, because otherwise it's great having these wide options, but you need people centrally, otherwise it's very easy to defend against. So I quite like the 4-2-3-1. I quite like that as an option with the personnel they've got available. But I think if they did change the personnel in January, I think you can make a case for lots of other formations. I just think they need they sort of need the player Jack Redoni is hopefully going to be in a year's time. Like now, they need a sort of really good attacking passing eight, I think. And the thing about Redoni is that I really like him. I like his bravery. I like his willingness to get on the ball. But also, I would say he's going to be far better next season and possibly the season after than he is this season. There's a lot of feeling his way through games, a lot of adjusting to the Championship, a lot of adjusting to the demands going on at the moment, which is fine, and it's all part of the process.
And he's learning very quickly. I think that's one of the most impressive things about Redoni is he learns so quickly.
Yeah, but I think they really could do with a tried and trusted midfield option that is a proper forward passer, a proper progressive midfielder. But it's a big ask because we're not talking about transfers, but if we're already saying they should be looking at a striker and they should be looking at a progressive eight, they're not cheap options. They're difficult roles to fill. They're not... That's your sort of roller coasters and fireworks roles, and they always cost you money. You know, them and wingers, it's just not as easy as it is to go and get, with all due respect to them, you know, defensive midfielders and defenders, etc. So it may have to be one or the other, and we'll see how we go.
I think they've acknowledged that there's probably going to have to be outgoings as well. And I think understandable when you're looking at a centre forward, because as you say, they're the most expensive players on the pitch, and the position they're in, they can't, I think, another Tyrese Simpson is not what they need. You know, that they need someone a bit more proven who maybe isn't going to, you know, I don't think they have the budget to go and sign a 20 goal a season striker, but even a 10 goal a season striker at the moment would be an improvement on what they've got. You know, if they can get someone who scores 5 or 6 in the second half of the season, that might be enough.
It's somebody who comes up against a Championship defence and goes, all right, this is fine.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's they need that little bit of experience, but we'll see. Who knows what they've lined up? You know, we did like their transfer business this summer, Steve. You know,
a lot of it. Yeah.
There were one or two that we raised our eyebrows at, but we did like it. So there's still things to build on. But like you say, I think there could be a couple of outgoings as well. We'll see.
Yeah. Another player we should talk about in terms of bringing about an attacking improvement. You and I went to the B team game on Friday, along with 297 others. There was only one player that we came away talking about. Loic Iheanacho got the goal, obviously, we should mention. And I think Nicholas Bilokapic as well in goal had a really good game, kept everything out, because it was a very fun, silly game, it's worth saying. It could easily have been sort of 7-4, that game.
Yeah. His kicking is gargantuan. Yeah, I mean, the amount of times, this isn't a plus point. I'm not trying to make it as a plus point, but the amount of times he picked out the opposition goalkeeper with his kicks just because, it is absolutely gargantuan, really shocked me. But yeah, he played very, very,
very
well.
Low arc as well. It's like Jordan Pickford, isn't
it?
Like, it's very low, long kicks. But
Get him on pens.
He looks like, quick word for him, he looks like a keeper, doesn't he? Like, he's so composed.
Oh, yeah. I've just been writing, I mean, this really is one for the hipsters. I've just been writing about a Dutch keeper called Martin van der Hoort, who is, he's 20 years old. He's playing for Genk in Belgium, but he's already been signed by Red Bull Leipzig. Oh, sorry, we're not allowed to call them fizzy drink enthusiasts in Leipzig for 2024. And he's playing regularly. And he reminds me a lot, funnily enough, of Bilo. because he's just got the same sort of stature. They're sort of 6'2", 6'4", whatever it is, but they carry themselves like they're 7'5". They get down really well. Their distribution is really good. Yeah, he does just look like a goalkeeper. And I think it's worth saying that the game, they were playing West Brom, and West Brom's youth side won that competition the year before, and they're really good, really, really good. They've got a couple of really good prospects in that team who I think it were fairly clear are going to have a future in the game, particularly attacking-wise. So there was a bit of a pattern to the game, which was sort of Town defending really, really well and trying to restrict their chances and then catching them on the break, which is pretty much what the first team have been doing the last couple of games. games. And like you say, it was just a very silly game. It was good fun in the end.
But the man at the middle of everything for Town, like it, first sort of 20 minutes, it was all West Brom. They're creating all the chances, and then gradually the tide turned. Second half, actually, Town dominated it, having been counter-attacking first half. But Brahim Diarra, just at the middle of everything, you know, he was absolutely taking the mick out of the West Brom midfielders. Like every time he got the ball, he'd just take it past someone, and in a way that made everyone go, oh, and sort of get a bit giddy. And then, being Brahim Diarra, he would then get to the edge of the box and put a shot over the bar.
Oh, that chance at the end. He had a chance at the end where he did.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd literally done everything right, and he cut inside, goal at his mercy, keeper on his way down, and he put it high, wide, and handsome, and everyone was like, oh.
And you can laugh at it in a B team game. Like, it's just great entertainment.
Yeah.
If you were playing for 3 points in the Championship in the relegation battle, it would be so frustrating. But if they can just coach that out of him, and it's not shoot better, it's let someone else have the ball, it's, you know, do all of that stuff from the edge of your own third to the edge of the opposition box, do all that exactly as you're doing it, and then give it to someone else, give it to Sorba, give it to Tino, give it to Wardy. But he'll be, if he can also do that, he'll be quite a player.
Yeah, but also you've got to be a little bit careful that you don't want to coach that bravery out of him either. That's the thing. He's a very exciting player who every so often in a game gets really, really bored, so decides to take on four players and is largely successful in that endeavour. And that's why he gets you off your seat, doesn't
he? I think the simple instruction for him would just be like, unless you're at or past the penalty spot or you're one-on-one with a keeper, don't shoot.
Yeah.
If he can just get that in his head. And it's, you know, players have certain habits, and it's harder than that to break players out of habits sometimes. Cough, cough, Janino Bakuna. But
that's a bit harsh, telling him to cough.
but I don't know. I think Diarra could become quite an important player if they can just get that message into him and he's willing to take it on board.
They have to find a way to fit him in, because he does something nobody else in that squad does.
Apart from Tino, yeah.
Yeah, he has got a bit of X factor, and he has got a bit of last 20 minutes against a couple of defenders who are just tiring a little bit.
That's
on their
his
legs.
Role for
They're
now,
gonna
isn't it?
Be, yeah, he's going to win yellow cards ahoy. You know, he's that sort of player, so I think they've got to find a future. But there are a couple of other performances worth talking about. I thought Brody Spencer was very good again. You know, everyone knows I like him, but I thought he was very solid
playing right
again.
Of the back three, yeah.
Yeah, Loic Aina himself. It was, if anybody has seen Loic Aina before, it was the full Loic Aina that game. You know, yellow card first half for trying to break someone in two. Really good, solid defending, lots of heading bricks away. And then he comes up with a run that would have graced the Argentina 1986 World Cup squad to score the goal. It was sensational.
It's like, oh, you've got a lot to do here, Loic. And he just beats his man and then curls it into the far post. It's like, oh, all right. it was brilliant.
Weirdly, like, Town had a load of clear-cut chances. They hit the post a couple of times. There was one first half where they hit one post. The keeper made a great save. This was after an overhead kick has been saved as well. There are a couple of, like, really mad scramble moments. But it took a central defender to actually show the composure to realise he was in front of goal and actually pass it into the back of the net. It was a great goal. Great goal, to be fair. And there's a few of these B-team games coming up. And really, if you can get down there, you know, like, try and get down, because they are a lot of fun and you do see something a little bit different.
Yeah, they're great fun, these B-team games. It's a very different atmosphere. It's a lot more laid back. It's a lot more fun. Like, I'm sure everyone at the club, like, you know, takes them seriously. And, you know, obviously, you know, they're trying to develop the players, etc. But yeah, it's for the fan. You can just go and have fun and sort of watch without sort of worrying, because if you lose, then it's the B team, you don't especially care. Yeah. So as Dave says, they've got games coming up this Friday. They're playing Middlesbrough. That's a 1 p.m. kickoff, which I know is weird, but it's because England are playing in the evening. So, and then they're playing Watford on Friday the 9th of December, so just before the season gets back underway. They're playing that Friday evening, so both at the John Smith's. I think it's a fiver for adults and two or three quid for concessions.
I took Bo along with me, my daughter, who sat next to me, and she had great fun because, you know, you can hear everything that's being said on the pitch, which she found highly amusing, and she saw some sort of different players, and she just really enjoyed the experience because it is a very different experience, isn't it? It is more, like I say, it's a bit more fun, a bit more light-hearted somehow.
She got a picture with Mark Fotheringham as well.
she did, and she said, when we saw him, I was having a quick chat with him and she came over and I said, oh, do you want your picture? She didn't know who he was. And I was like, you know who Mark Fotheringham was? She said, yeah, but I've never seen him without his tracksuit on.
Which is probably good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've also been to Harrogate this weekend. So I've been catching up with the loanees. Spoke to Romney Critchlow. The way the fixtures fall, I've not had a chance to go to Bradford because I had to pick between Bradford or Harrogate, and we've got more at Harrogate, so I went for Harrogate. And
you made the right decision.
Yes, I absolutely did. Like, it was funny because, like, a lot of the time, and I've just written this in a piece, so sorry for repeating myself, but when you go to a game as a journalist to watch, like, a specific player, it's a bit of a gamble because there's a chance they're not going to do anything. It's like, I once went to Cardiff to watch Sorba Thomas sit on the bench for 90 minutes for Wales, which was great fun. And coming into this game, when I looked at Harrogate's results, it's like, this might not be great fun. They're down sort of towards the bottom of the table, and they're playing Mansfield, who were up in the playoff places, and they won 3-0, and two of the town players got assists. So there was no Josh Rostfield, he was suspended, the midfielder. Matty Daly played at number 10. Basically, he was pretty anonymous, to be honest. Someone said that's the quietest game he's had for Harrogate. He's been sort of the only player keeping them afloat recently. He scored a lot of important goals, but unfortunately did nothing in this game and went off injured. I'm not sure how serious that is or otherwise, but went off injured early in the second half. But their left wing was Jaheim Headley at left back and Danny Grant on the left wing, and they had a really good partnership going. Both Grant and Headley got assists, and I spoke to Danny Grant after the game. That piece is on the website. It was good to catch up with him, and it's good to see him playing regular football after sort of the first year that he had at the club. And you know, he's doing well. That's his third assist in eight. I would say I think he needs at least the rest of the season in League Two. I think Danny Grant, he looked he's not really completed 90 minutes many times, and he looked pretty tired by about the hour, and he went off with 15 minutes to go. And I think, understandably, because he's, as he said after the game, it's the first time in about two years that he's actually been playing regular competitive football. But Jaheim Headley looks really promising. The left back looks like properly good. When I turned up, I was speaking to the local media before the game and said, you know, how they've been getting on. And they all said Jaheim's been the best of the four. And he was excellent in this game. We've seen him play for the B team, you and I, Dave, haven't we? Quite a few times, and he's looked promising. But Raw, he sort of had a bit of a tendency to get into blind alleys going forward and then sort of end up a bit lost and not know what to do with it. But you can see just playing those competitive games, he's learned to pick his moments a lot better, and he's choosing his moments really well. I think there's a really, really promising left back there who has a really legitimate shot of getting into the town first team in the next. I mean, I wouldn't be hugely surprised if they brought him back in January, but I've not spoken to club about that. But the way that he's been playing and the fact that they've got an injury in that area makes me wonder if they might look to do that. But if not January, then certainly in the next year or two, I think he's potentially got a genuine future at the club.
Yeah, you'd hope so, because he's like, we saw it, I can't remember which B team game it was last season, but he was man of the match by a while, and he scored a great goal where he cut inside and just curled it from 25 yards. So yeah, you would like, not every player makes it at the club, do they? You know, there's a reason the transfer system feeds the lower leagues like it does, and you, who knows what the future holds. But like, being able to fill a sort of an expensive position like fullback potentially is always worth looking at, isn't it? It's always worth looking at. I think I saw Danny Grant a few weeks ago, and he looked like Danny Grant. And I'm not sort of heavily criticising when I say that, but he looked like Danny Grant in that he looked really tired after about 40 minutes. He kept showing in flashes what he could do, and his pace when he was fully fit was really good. But yeah, you just feel like he just needs to be a whole lot fitter to actually push into games. Yeah, and Josh Oshlefield, I'm still not 100% sure what his best position is, because I don't know if he's a 6 or an 8. I've seen him play as in the middle of a back 3 for the B team as well more than once. Like, I'm still not 100% sure where his future lies.
Yeah, as I say, I couldn't really comment because I didn't get the chance to see him. And Matty Daly is, I think, what they've said there is he came in, started the season well, then had a dip, and then has been back at it again recently, which I think has pretty much been the pattern on all of his loans. And I think for him to make it, you'd need to see a bit more consistency out of him, because he's I think when he's at his game, he is far too good for League Two. But I think the issue with him is he just isn't at his game as often as he probably should be. But, you know, that again, that can be something that comes with experience and time, can't it? So, but yeah, I think the thing I liked about Danny Grant actually was his passing more than anything else. He plays with his head up all the time, and some of the passes he picked, little through balls into the box or playing it into the feet of someone who was running towards the edge of the box, were pretty smart, actually. So, yeah, I think he probably needs a bit more time out, but yeah, interesting to
he
catch up anyway.
He needs some luck, Danny Grant, yeah, doesn't he? He needs some luck. That's his next step.
But yeah, interesting to catch up on them anyway. Right then, Dave, music recommendation.
Hang on, give me a second. Just hang on, I'm going to have to do what you do and bring up my Spotify here. So my music recommendation is Naz's new album, King's Disease 3,
ooh,
which is basically everything you would ever want from a Naz album. And is just, there's nothing particularly exceptional about it, but trust me, I would take one of these a year, every year, for the rest of my life.
Excellent. Oh, he did an EP a few years ago that I really, really liked. Nazir. Was that a full album? Anyway, I really like that one, so I'm definitely going to check that out, Dave. You and DTS have both accused me of being a musical hipster and having really weird, obscure taste, which I think is slightly true but also slightly unfair. But just to lean into that and, you know, become a parody of myself, I thought I'd pick the most obscure and inaccessible album that I actually genuinely like, which is 2005's Rehearsing My Choir by the Fiery Furnaces, who are a brother and sister team from Chicago, one of my favorite bands for a long, 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 long time, maybe going on 20 years now. And they did an album where they got their grandmother on to sing about a fictionalized version of her life growing up in gangland Chicago. And it's brilliant.
Yeah, this sounds right up my street.
It's really weird, but like oddly enjoyable. It's like just a really nice narrative that goes all the way through the album. So yeah, there you go. That's mine.
Yeah, very you. Very
cool.
You. Exploded your own myths there, Steve.
And next week I'll go for, you know, Madonna or something. Right. Cheers, Dave. We'll see you next time.
Happy World Cup,
oh,
everybody.
Yeah.
If you do indeed celebrate.